So, imagine buying a house, right? Like, you pay off the entire mortgage, the deed is fully in your name, and you literally have the keys sitting in your pocket.
Right, you completely own it.
Exactly, you own it. But then, say, a few years later, a light bulb burns out in the kitchen. You go to unscrew it,
Yeah.
and you discover the socket has this, like, proprietary lock on it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You can't just put in a new bulb. You have to call the original builder, wait for their authorized technician to drive out on whatever schedule they have, and pay whatever fee they demand.
Just to change a light bulb.
Just so they can digitally unlock the socket for you.
Like,
I mean, that scenario sounds completely absurd, but it actually perfectly illustrates a fundamental shift in how commerce operates today.
it really does.
So, welcome to the deep dive. Today, our mission is to unpack a really fascinating internal document from an outdoor gear startup called Timber Outdoor, TYMMBER. It's titled Memo 004. We built it so you can fix it. And it was written on April 23, 2026, by the company's founder, Mike Isaacs, out in Sierra County, New Mexico. We're looking at a company trying to radically redefine what it means to actually own something in the 21st century.
Yeah, we are basically dissecting a blueprint for physical sovereignty today because for Timber, the whole right to repair thing, it isn't some political lobbying effort, or like a public relations stunt about consumer rights.
Right, it goes way deeper than that.
Exactly. It is an absolute uncompromising engineering requirement. It's baked into the very DNA of their products. They are building gear specifically to counteract an era where true ownership is quietly disappearing.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because to understand Timber's radical design philosophy, we first need to look at the incredibly broken system they're reacting to. The prologue of this memo lays out a reality happening right now in, like, farm fields and driveways across America. We assume that physical possession equals ownership. But modern manufacturers have essentially converted physical goods into software-locked subscription models.
Yeah, and the memo highlights a really glaring example of this modern agriculture.
Yes, the tractors.
It's wild. We are talking about $500,000 tractors that physically cannot be turned on without a dealer's digital permission.
Wait, really? $500,000 and you can't even start it.
Right. The engine might be mechanically flawless, but if, say, a sensor trips or just a minor code throws an error, the manufacturer's software acts as a digital padlock.
Oh, wow.
The machine just becomes a very expensive lawn ornament until an authorized technician arrives with a proprietary diagnostic computer to clear the code.
The detail in the text that absolutely blew my mind was the farmer's response to this.
Oh, yeah, the hacking.
The memo describes farmers who are resorting to downloading pirated Eastern European software from the dark web just to hack into and fix their own equipment.
Which sounds crazy, but
It is crazy,
yeah.
but they aren't doing this to steal anything. They are hacking their own property just to make it run.
Because the alternative is financial ruin,
Yeah.
The memo notes that during harvest, these farmers often have a critical 48-hour window.
Just 48 hours.
Yeah. If a storm is rolling in, that tiny window determines whether their entire season survives or just rots in the field. They literally cannot afford to wait 3 days for a dealer to drive out.
Their whole livelihood is on the line.
Exactly. And the manufacturer has weaponized the software to route all repair revenue back to themselves. It creates the state of perpetual dependency.
Right.
The manufacturer retains all the leverage, leaving the owner completely helpless, precisely when they need their tools the most. What's fascinating here is how quietly this transition happened.
But I mean, let me push back a little here.
Yeah.
Are modern machines just getting way too complex for the average person to tinker with? Because a modern tractor isn't just a mechanical diesel engine anymore, right? It's a rolling supercomputer managing emissions, yield tracking, GPS steering. A manufacturer could argue they lock it down because if an untrained person tries to fix it, they could accidentally brick a multi-$1,000 system or violate environmental regulations.
I get that, but the memo explicitly addresses that exact argument. Complexity isn't the root issue here. Intentionality is.
How so?
Software isn't simply running the machine. It is being intentionally designed as a mechanism to lock out the owner. It's artificial complexity. Timmer points out that, if we can build spacecraft that astronauts can repair in orbit, we can certainly build a tractor that a farmer can diagnose in a field.
That is a really good point.
The complexity is often a deliberate choice to maintain a monopoly on the life cycle of the product. And since modern goods are essentially being treated like tethered digital rentals, Timber's response is to strip product development down to the bare metal.
Right, they call it their design-first approach.
Yes.
The memo lays out 5 uncompromising engineering commitments that every single product must meet before it ever ships. And rather than just listing them off, let's look at how they apply to a specific piece of gear.
Good idea.
Timber makes a product called the RAAK cooking system.
Yeah.
So RAAK. If you are taking this stove deep into a desert canyon or like a backcountry blizzard and it fails, you can't exactly call customer support.
No, you're on your own.
Your only tech support is the multi-tool in your pocket.
Which brings us to the first engineering hurdle Timber had to clear: the fasteners.
The screws.
Right. If your stove breaks in the wilderness, a proprietary star-shaped screw is basically a death sentence for your gear. So Timber's first commitment is strictly standard fasteners and parts.
No weird bolts that require a special tool you have to order from their website?
Exactly. You should be able to find the hardware to fix their gear in the bins of any local farm store or hardware shop.
But say the hardware isn't the issue. Say a specific valve on the RAAK stove cracks under extreme pressure. Usually in modern manufacturing, components are glued or ultrasonically welded together into one big module, right, to save on assembly costs.
No, totally.
So if the valve breaks, you have to throw away the entire $200 stove.
And that is why their second commitment is modular by design. They engineer for the part, not the assembly. Meaning the RAAK stove is designed to be easily disassembled by the user. You isolate the cracked valve, you swap out that single piece of brass, and the rest of the system remains perfectly intact.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you never throw away an entire complex system just because a single minor component failed.
But you still need to know how to take it apart safely without ruining it, right?
Oh.
I've tried to fix modern appliances, and the manufacturers guard their service manuals like state secrets.
They really do.
They hide them behind dealer agreements or subscription paywalls.
Well, Timber's third commitment solves that open documentation. Every service manual, repair guide, and parts diagram is published openly on day one.
No paywalls.
None. If you own the physical item, they believe you have an absolute right to understand the mechanics of how it functions. They aren't just selling you the hardware, they are providing the map to maintain it.
And if the RAAK system had an electronic ignition switch or firmware, we hit their fourth commitment, which is no software lockouts.
Right.
No digital walls. The owner gets full, unencrypted access to any diagnostic information.
And the fifth commitment is perhaps the most radical from a supply chain perspective: parts availability.
Yeah, this one is huge.
Timber makes a minimum 10-year commitment to provide parts beyond the production life of the product, but they actually take it a step further. They are actively designing for compatibility with aftermarket and third-party sources right from the start.
Wait.
Yeah. They intentionally use common thread pitches and standard dimensions so that if Timber ever goes out of business, a third-party machining shop could easily supply the spare parts.
They are literally ensuring the product outlives the company that made it.
Exactly.
So what does this all mean? If I buy a RAAK cooking system and the modular design and standard parts mean it genuinely lasts for 3 decades, aren't they engineering themselves right out of repeat customers?
That is the big question.
I mean, if nobody ever needs to buy a replacement stove, how does the business survive? It seems like corporate suicide in an economy built on constant consumption.
You've hit on the exact tension that forces us to reevaluate the economics of the entire outdoor gear industry. Because the current industry playbook relies entirely on repeat purchases. A company cannot grow its quarterly revenue if its products never break.
Right.
But companies obviously can't market their products by saying, hey, this will break in 2 years, so you have to buy another one.
Yeah, that wouldn't sell very well.
No, it wouldn't. So instead, they mask that cycle of planned obsolescence in the language of environmentalism.
Yes. The greenwashing critique in this memo is so fierce.
It's brutal.
The industry has totally weaponized sustainability as a marketing tool. They sell an aesthetic of environmentalism. We constantly see tags bragging about carbon offsets, recycled zipper pulls, and jackets made from reclaimed ocean plastics.
And the memo is careful to note that using recycled materials isn't inherently bad, but it points out a massive, stealthy contradiction.
Which is?
The outdoor industry demands a 24-month replacement cycle while claiming to be green.
Oh, man.
And Timber drops this brilliant, grounding philosophy in the memo: the most sustainable product is the one already made.
Wow. The most sustainable product is the one already made. That forces you to look at the massive hidden carbon costs of manufacturing any replacement item.
Exactly.
Before a brand new sustainable jacket ever reaches a hiking trail, it carries an enormous environmental toll. You have the raw material extraction deep in a mine or a forest, the energy-intensive factory processing,
the shipping.
Yes, the global shipping on cargo freighters across oceans, the packaging waste. It just adds up.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, when a product is designed with proprietary parts or glued seams so it cannot be repaired, and it fails prematurely, all of those costs get paid again.
The extraction, the carbon emissions.
All of it. They all get paid again to manufacture its replacement. When your unrepairable gear tears, you pay the financial cost of a new one, but you and the planet are paying the hidden carbon cost all over again.
And the manufacturer, meanwhile, gets to collect revenue twice while wearing a halo of environmental responsibility.
It's completely backward.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Think about your own buying habits for a second. We have all been trained by marketing departments to feel a little burst of self-righteousness when we buy gear with a green leaf tag.
Oh, totally guilty of that.
Right. We buy the eco-friendly boots, the soles delaminate after two seasons because they can't be resold, we toss them in a landfill, and then we feel good about buying another eco-friendly pair.
And Timber calls out the hypocrisy directly here. Planned obsolescence and environmental responsibility cannot coexist.
They just can't.
You cannot claim to care about preserving the outdoors while engineering products that require scheduled replacement. Repairability permanently removes a replacement product from the global manufacturing queue.
So keeping a battered 30-year-old jacket fully functional because the company empowered you to sew the seams and replace the zipper with standard parts off a spool that is the only actual green choice.
Yes.
It shifts to the paradigm completely. Repairability isn't just a feature, it is the most honest sustainability metric we have.
Which brings us back to your skepticism about their business model.
Right, the money.
If making indestructible gear eliminates that constant cycle of repeat purchasing of the same item, how does Timber plan to keep the lights on? Who is buying this stuff if they refuse to convert a one-time sale into a permanent software revenue stream?
Well, the memo identifies a massive demographic that the rest of the high-end outdoor industry largely ignores. They are targeting 268 million Americans who grew up fixing things.
That's a huge market.
It is. The people who change their own oil, mend their own clothes, and trust their own calloused hands way more than they trust an authorized dealer appointment.
And Timber recognizes a deep cultural alienation here. Modern consumers feel fundamentally alienated from their own possessions.
Oh, absolutely.
You interact with your smartphone or your modern car, but you don't really understand them, and you certainly aren't allowed to crack them open. This raises an important question about consumer psychology. Timber is betting that treating customers as true owners rather than passive subscribers generates a fierce lifetime loyalty that essentially replaces traditional marketing budgets.
So let's look at how they capture that market with a product like their Stump audio system.
Ah, the Stump.
Yeah. This is a heavy-duty speaker built for outdoor labor. It features 8 speakers. It runs on a massive EV-grade battery. And it has an IPX8 waterproof rating.
Which is hardcore waterproofing.
Right. But usually, a waterproof electronic device with an EV battery is a complete black box. It is heavily glued shut at the factory to ensure that waterproof seal.
Because water and batteries don't mix.
Exactly. But if the battery degrades after a few years, which, you know, all batteries do, you can't open it. The whole unit goes into the trash. So do modern consumers actually want to open up a waterproof EV battery speaker like the Stump to fix it? Or have we been fundamentally conditioned to prefer the convenience of tossing it in the trash and overnighting a new one?
Well, Timber assumes they do want to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you achieve IPX8 waterproofing without glue?
Right. How do they do it?
Timber engineered the Stump using heavy-duty rubber compression gaskets and standard Torx screws, functioning somewhat like a submarine hatch.
A submarine hatch. That is brilliant.
It is. A ranch hand can take the Torx wrench rattling around in the back of their truck, unscrew the housing, and lift the panel. They swap out the degraded EV battery for a new one, screw the housing back down, and the physical compression of the gasket reseals the unit perfectly.
So the waterproofing is achieved through mechanical pressure, not chemical adhesive. The ultimate standard Timber is aiming for is captured in this vivid image toward the end of the memo. They talk about a rancher driving a 1985 truck.
Yeah, I love this part.
That specific truck will likely still be running and hauling hay in the year 2075. And it isn't because the truck is magic. It is because an entire ecosystem exists around it.
Right, the community.
The community of people who know how to work on that engine exists. The aftermarket parts exist. The open knowledge exists. The rancher doesn't need to ask a corporation's permission to keep that truck alive.
And that is the loyalty Timber is banking on. If you buy the RAX stove and the stump speaker and they perform flawlessly for a decade because you can maintain them yourself, you aren't going to buy a second stove.
No.
But when Timber releases a canvas tent or a backcountry backpack, you will buy it from them without hesitation. They are building lifetime value across an entire ecosystem of products rather than relying on the repeat purchase of the exact same broken item.
So let's briefly trace the profound journey this memo has taken us on today. We started by looking at a broken, dystopian reality where a farmer is frantically trying to hack their own tractor with pirated software during a life-or-death 48-hour harvest window.
Just because a manufacturer locked the engine behind a digital paywall.
Exactly. We examined how that intense sense of helplessness inspired Timber to completely reject the concept of planned obsolescence, establishing an uncompromising design-first standard.
Right. Standard fasteners, modular parts, open documentation, no software lockouts, and a militant commitment to aftermarket parts availability.
Then we unpack the stealthy hypocrisy of the outdoor industry's greenwashing, revealing that true environmental stewardship isn't found in carbon offsets, but in the gritty reality of repairability.
The most sustainable product truly is the one already made.
And finally, we explored a radical market strategy built around giving 268 million Americans their physical sovereignty back, trusting that an empowered owner becomes a lifetime advocate.
So, what stands out to you in Timber's approach? When you consider the sheer amount of engineering required just to allow you to fix a broken valve on a camp stove, how does it change the way you view the appliances and tools sitting in your own garage?
It really makes you think.
It forces you to look at the motives behind the design of everything you interact with. Are you being served by the product, or are you serving the manufacturer's revenue cycle?
Man, that's a tough question. And there's one tiny detail from the document I want to leave you with to ponder. It sits quietly at the very bottom of the memo, in the fine print.
The motto.
Yeah, it is the company's motto. The Latin phrase, nullius in verba. It translates roughly to take nobody's word for it. Timber's entire philosophy is built on the idea of absolute, uncompromising sovereignty over the physical goods you buy with your own money. But if we apply that motto to the rest of our lives, it reveals something deeply unsettling about the modern world. Companies have spent the last decade quietly converting our physical environments into digital rentals. Think about that locked light bulb socket we discussed at the beginning. Look around your own home today. The smart thermostat on your hallway wall?
Yeah.
The expansive digital movie library you supposedly bought on your television? The proprietary software actively managing the anti-lock brakes in the car sitting in your driveway right now?
It's everywhere.
If the corporate servers running all those systems went completely dark tomorrow, what do you actually truly own?